And welcome back, everybody. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whenever you're listening. It is that time of year where it starts to get cold. I had a completely different topic planned today, but fortunately I have someone coming on tomorrow, and I'll tell you guys who that is at the end of the show. It's going to be a very, very cool show, and it's completing out a show. I don't want to put this. There are three people that are the hosts of this certain show, and two of them have already been on here. And if somebody can guess this by the end of the show, you can literally look and you'll see who it is. But anyways, I had a completely different show planned today, but since my guest tomorrow had said that he'd be available tomorrow, we decided to just do that because I will be free. And then after that show, I'll be recording with Tommy Sammons on Year Zero. And we're probably going to talk some stuff about politics, and he's probably going to tell me about his vacation and stuff. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But either way, it's going to be a fun show, I'm sure. So tonight I wanted to talk about Make America Healthy Again. What's up, JC? Good to see you. Make America Healthy Again. How can we do that? Why is everybody so sick? And you know, what are the causes? And also I want to talk about RFK's takes and some of the things that RFK has said since he dedicated this whole campaign to health, which I'm going to explain this stuff in a little bit more depth throughout the show, but I wanted to talk about this today because I feel like it's my place as the guy who talks about a lot of health topics, not lately, unfortunately, but that it is incumbent upon me to elaborate a little bit more on my thoughts on how to make America healthy again, and as to whether or not I think RFK will be able to do that, or if he really even has the knowledge to do that, which is a whole nother conversation that might make some people angry. But you know, I'm definitely not here to be liked by everybody, and I've definitely pissed off some people that like me recently, which I'm perfectly okay with, because I'm here to call things the way I see them, not the way that people want me to call it. That's just not who I am, and that's not who I'll ever be. So without any more rambling here in the beginning of the show, let me do my shilling and then we'll run the intro and we'll kind of get right into it. Deemed fit through the link below. Should auto-populate the code SARAM25, where you get a little discount to get you some clothes that make you look all jacked and tan and damn good while you're working it out. Tucker Fitness through the link below to get some supplements. They have a Make America Healthy Again shirt there that I actually like quite a bit, and I'm probably going to get one here soon. So make sure you hit that link below through Tucker Fitness and Deemed Fit to check everything out. And let's also go to Fox & Sons Coffee and get some delicious coffee from them. As we know, I absolutely love Fox & Sons Coffee, and it's what I drink as frequently as possible. I give it to my parts manager because I had a spare bag, and he said he really liked the stuff too. Alex and Conrad, good to see you guys. Glad you guys could join me here on this wonderful Pennsylvania cold evening on the 13th of November. Yesterday was my anniversary too. Anyways, that's long enough for an intro. Let's get into the show, guys. All right. And one more time, welcome back, everybody. Lysander Spooner, good to see you, man, over on Twitter. You know, nobody ever comments on Twitter. I get a whole ton of viewers from Twitter, but no one really ever stops by. So thanks for dropping by, man. Anyways, make America healthy again. What the heck is going on, and who coined this term? As I kind of said in the introduction, it was Robert F. Kennedy Jr. who coined the term make America healthy again, because it doesn't take a genius to figure out that we do have a severe health problem in this country. If you look around, you go to any airport, Walmart, superstore, you name it, you're going to see obese people everywhere. Is this some kind of giant grand conspiracy? Is this just people can't stop eating? What the hell is the deal with it? I'm going to try to explain that today. I also want to talk about some of the potential solutions. None of these solutions are going to be anything grandiose, and unfortunately some of you guys are going to probably be upset at kind of how I approach these things, because influencers tend to like to use shock value to get you to buy into their brands and their issues and to sell you on supplements or to sell you on channel memberships, all that kind of stuff. That's not what I do here. Once again, Alex Patino is the first member to member of the channel to comment on today's video, but I do offer subscriptions to the channel. They're $2.99 a month. I really try to keep everything that you can do to support me as, you know, budget friendly as possible, because I'm not trying to make a living off of this. If I do, great. If I don't, okay, well, I still fix cars for a living and I don't see that changing anytime soon. But people like to use shock value when it comes to nutrition specifically, because that really gets a lot of eyes. It gets a lot of clicks. And there are, you know, once again, much to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s point, there is a huge health crisis in this country, and that has led to, you know, the chronic disease epidemic. And, you know, I'm sure we hear a lot about people talking how a lot of the chronic disease that we're facing today as a country is preventable completely through lifestyle. So there is a lot going on here, and because there's a lot going on here, and because there's so many different explanations and nothing really seems concrete, it's very easy for something to take up that vacuum and fill that explanation with things that either you want to hear or you want to believe, or, you know, a conspiracy that basically sounds good to the mind that doesn't understand these kind of things. So I try to be a vessel for this kind of information to make it digestible, because I'm just a dumbass mechanic who changed his life through health and fitness. And I hope to kind of give some people some information to maybe allow them to do the same thing if they choose to use this information as I have used it. Now I've related my history in this podcast plenty of times on another podcast before about my kind of journey through the health sphere. Sorry, my dog's going nuts. I don't know what the hell's the problem. He could hear a bag in the wind and, he'd be barking his head off. But anyways, I've detailed out my journey and how I went from 250 pounds all the way down to about 180 pounds. Right now I'm sitting around like 205, right? So I'm about 5'11" tall, and I would like to believe I have a little bit more muscle mass than the average person. So, my body composition isn't completely jacked, iced, and everything like that, but I would like to believe I look better than the average person, and I could definitely lift more than the average person. So I did the carnivore diet for 2.5 years, a couple years back, and that completely changed the way that I looked at nutrition and everything. I mean, it honestly completely changed my life for the better, and that was because that allowed me to get into a caloric deficit, and when you're in a caloric deficit, you lose a lot of weight. Now, the even bigger thing here, specifically with a carnivore or a ketogenic diet, as I've laid out in the podcast before, if you go back to, I think it's episode 105, where I talked about low-carb cure-all, I think the episode's called, where I talked about ketogenic diets, any kind of low-carbohydrate diet has a very, very good buy-in. Now, what I mean by that is that you can lose a lot of weight very, very fast. So the reward centers in our brain, right? Whether you want to say that's dopamine responders or whatever, dopamine receptors, dopamine itself, whatever it is, you see the weight on the scale drop dramatically, very, very fast over a very, very short period of time. So therefore, you know you're doing something right, right? Now, this is solely because when you eliminate a lot of carbohydrate, which is in a lot of hyperpalatable food, as are fats, then you lose a lot of body water as well. Body water also takes up some of the volume of your muscles. It also takes up some of the volume of your organs and all this other stuff. So you lose some size there, but once again, you lose a lot of weight quickly. If you're a more obese person and you have a lot of weight to lose, you're not necessarily as concerned about how big your biceps are or how good your chest looks immediately, right? You're more concerned about just trying to get whatever weight off of you that you can. So that being said, when you do a ketogenic diet and you lose a lot of this water weight and you do lose some legitimate fat, then now you know you're on the right track. Am I against this? No, not at all. But once again, I'm just explaining that a ketogenic diet or low carbohydrate diet is going to have a great buy-in, and it's very, very convincing at first. And this was very, very convincing for me as well, because I mean, I lost about 30 pounds within like the course of a couple months, which, you know, normally like what most dietitians and nutrition experts will tell you, you want to aim for about like a pound per week. If you're obese, that's drastically different because your body has so much energy to work with, right? The fat on your body is energy that your body can use to kind of sustain itself, sustain your organs, you know, your brain functions, your muscles and everything like that. If you're severely obese, as in your BMI is over, let's say 35, then you are so energy toxic, if you will, that once again, your body is going to want to use all that stored body fat before it ever even thinks about touching your lean muscle mass. So you could lose an exponential amount of weight initially before you really start tapping into muscle. When you start to get leaner and leaner and leaner, you know, let's say your BMI is around 25. Now, this is a different conversation when you want to start to reduce the amount of fat that you lose over a longer period of time. Because if you try to shorten it up and try to lose a whole bunch of, you know, weight at once, then you're probably going to throw away a lot of lean mass as well. So this is kind of all the reasons that I've gone along on a long tangent about low carbohydrate diets here, but it's very important that this is laid out so that way people understand why ketogenic diets are so popular. When you eliminate an entire food group, I've talked about this on shows, this show and other shows a lot, that a ketogenic diet, when you eliminate an entire food group, you tend to eliminate a lot of hyperpalatable foods, right? Because what hyperpalatable foods are foods that are very, very difficult to stop eating, essentially, right? Before I continue on that, B, good to see you, brother. Last night we jammed, and you know what? I should probably take a second to say this too. Tonight, B and I would be sharing a stage with the great Tommy Vexed, but unfortunately, due to financial issues, the tour had to be canceled. So unfortunately, here I am in my house, and I get to go to bed at 8:30 like I like to do. unfortunately, we're not going to get to play with Tommy Vexed. If he reschedules, we'll probably see if we could work out that show, but unfortunately, the tour was canceled, so here we are. And of course, it was only a couple days before the show. We were looking forward to it, and it just kind of is what it is. Alex Patina, I'm 5'6", 40 years old. I weigh 220 because I'm a truck driver. It's been hard to trim on my belly and my chest heavy so that detracts from my belly. Good thing is I kept 34 to 36 inch waist. Depends on how much liquid I've consumed. 34 to 36 inch waist is pretty damn good, actually. You're not, and I'm sure you know this, you're not the leanest person out there. 5'6", at 220, that is a little bit heavy. But, you know, I did want to answer listener questions as well. There was a, I put up a thing in the community tab, asking if, you know, there were certain health topics that people wanted me to cover and I would cover them. So we'll get into that a little bit, but, so basically hyperpalatable foods are foods that you don't want to stop eating and they're not very satiating. So therefore when you could have like a brownie, right? A brownie is maybe the size of my palm, right? That brownie that is the size of my palm could easily be 300 to 400 calories, right? To put this into perspective, a Diet Coke can, which I don't have a can in front of me, I normally do, but a Diet Coke is obviously zero calories. A regular Coke is about 140 calories. A whole pound of strawberries is 140 calories. So what do you think is going to be more satisfying and contribute to more overall health and satiety, that 140 calories of Coke, which is a can that's maybe, you know, a little bit bigger than my hands right here? Or do you think that whole pound of strawberries, which takes up an entire bowl, or two, you know, which one do you think is going to be more conductive towards your health? Obviously, it's the pound of strawberries. So when it comes to your diet, you want to try to limit those hyperpalatable foods. Am I saying you should never have them? No, I've never said that. If you're out and your highest quality of life seems to be having a dessert with your wife or, you know, your kids or somebody you love, by all means, go ahead and enjoy, but that just shouldn't make up the bulk of your diet. And once again, these events don't make up the bulk of your life either. So what you would want to prioritize in your diet are foods that aren't hyperpalatable and foods that are, you know, basically induce satiety and are nutritious. So it's kind of a platitude, but I mean, the platitude works. Whole foods. So we're talking, you know, fruits and vegetables, leaner meats, because you're reducing on a lot of calories and you're getting a lot more protein. And then honestly, processed foods that are processed to make them more satiating and eliminate all, not like junk, but all the excess calories out of them. So like fat-free dairy is phenomenal. You know, fat-free, I still like a lot of fat-free yogurts. I like nut milks are good because that lowers a lot of like the fats and carbohydrates out of it. You get a lot of volume. There's all sorts of stuff that you could do and swap out. Like fried chicken is a good example of a hyperpalatable food, right? Because the texture, it tastes really good. You get some fat in there, you get some oil, and then the crunch of the breading on it tastes great. Now, if you start going to like, I like to go to Popeyes actually, which I know this is going to sound weird, but they have these blackened chicken tenders and man, are they delicious. They have like this little bit of kick to them. They got a little bit of like a pepperish flavor to them. Awesome. So something like that's really good to go for. So that kind of like highlights hyperpalatable foods. And like a lot of people think it's just carbohydrates and hyperpalatable foods, but it's not just carbohydrates. Cause like if you actually go calorie per calorie in these hyperpalatable foods, it's actually, they tend to be higher in fats, like chocolates, milkshakes, you know, let's say like a burger that's loaded with all the toppings. A lot of this is going to have like what, mayo, cheese. A burger itself has a lot of fat. There may be butter on it. And then the bread has some carbohydrates. And once again, this overall contributes to the whole, you know, basically the holistic experience of eating something that's hyperpalatable. So long tangent, but this is a lot of the reason why we have such an unhealthy country right now, and why, you know, as much as I've criticized RFK for, you know, the Zionism stuff, a lot of the foreign policy stuff, and then even like some of the insane green stuff, for him to focus his campaign around health is incredibly important. I wouldn't have my podcast be called In Liberty and Health if I didn't think health was important. This is what drives us. This is what keeps our 2 feet on the ground and keeps us moving and living good lives, is our health. So if you really don't have your health, what do you have? Because if you can't get out of bed, what can you do? If you can't walk to your car, what can you do? If you're not able to pick something up off the ground, what can you do? If you can't play with your kids, what can you do? I mean, health is just the most important thing. I focus on foreign policy a lot, but I mean, once again, that's because of, you know, everything that's going on in the world right now. But, you know, there's only so many ways I could tell you don't eat hyperpalatable foods, find a diet that works for you, exercise sufficiently, and all that good stuff. There's only so many ways I could tell you that before, you know, either you get it or you don't. So I have some stuff pulled up, and I want to talk a little bit about RFK's campaign and kind of some of the stuff that he was going on about. So there was this video, and hopefully I don't get copyright struck on this, but I wanted to go to a certain point in this video where we kind of, he talks about tartrazine, and I should have had this pulled up.
The same or better than other developed countries. Then suddenly more and more Americans began suffering from chronic diseases.
So, and as I've laid out in much of this podcast already, I do believe that a lot of the obesity epidemic is contributed, is largely caused by our food environment today. And not just the environment, but also like the food culture. When was the last time, and chat, feel free to answer this, but when was the last time you went to any kind of social gathering that didn't have food or alcohol? If you can name one, I will be absolutely floored. But every single event I've gone to, they have food. They have alcohol, you name it. They have it. They have it, just because this is the way that we are as humans. I mean, for all of time, we've had culture, you know, and rituals surrounding food.
From obesity, cancer, diabetes,
we'll move kidney disease, past this a little bit.
Heart disease, and all kinds of autoimmune diseases. Our maternal mortality rate soared to the highest of any developed.
We'll
these conditions as normal. But now in 2024, we're finally waking up to this cataclysm, and we're
yeah. And once again, big ups to RFK for bringing a lot of this stuff to light, because this, once again, is very, very, very important.
Asking ourselves how in the
world. I want to find serve that approves toxins. Is where I don't hate RFK, but like, he kind of goes into like toxins in the food supply. And when people say toxins or you hear the word cleanse, your ears should immediately perk up, and you should at least have the suspicion lurking in the back of your mind that you're being fed bullshit. Anytime anybody says cleanse or toxins and doesn't name what and specifies how this cleanse works, you're probably being fed BS, right? Your body works just fine the way it is at getting rid of all the junk that's in it. You don't need to do any kind of alcohol cleanse or juice cleanse or anything like that. The reason why these things work is most of the time because you don't eat anything. And once again, if your liver's working fine, you're fine. You don't need any kind of cleanse. Toxins, this is a whole nother conversation. People, once again, throw this at the wall. It's a buzzword, essentially, right? when people say toxins, I think sometimes they're referring to like atrazine, but what you really have to start to kind of move into is, okay, well, does this show up in human literature? Because I don't care about mechanisms. RFK in this video talks about tartrazine. I want to make sure I get to this because I want to explain this a little bit more. And it's not like here we go.
Include a lot of poisons, including a harmful yellow dye called tartrazine or
tartrazine. Okay. I literally Googled this. This took me 2 seconds. The first study that comes up is a mechanistic study. You guys may not understand this, but when people cite mechanistic studies, it's not that they're useless, but they really don't tell you what you need to know, because what a lot of people can't seem to disentangle, and I really hope you guys kind of take this in, because this is how you can easily get misled. A mechanistic study tells you how basically something works in a petri dish. Like, so if I were to take, let's say, your red blood cells or something like that and slap a whole bunch of sucralose on top of them, and they started to go haywire. This is basically what like a lot of these mechanistic studies are doing, is that they're teasing out a mechanism, right? So, and this is what this study that I was reading on tetrazine basically does, is that they said, hey, these cells, we took them in a petri dish, and when we exposed them to tartrazine, they did all this weird shit and they look carcinogenic. Okay, that's fine. Do we have human evidence on this? Honestly, I don't know. RFK could be completely right in this stuff. And he is right to point out that we have a lot of health issues in this country. But the problem is that when you try to use mechanistic data to make a point, that doesn't always show up in human randomized controlled trials. Last night I was watching a YouTube channel from Dr. Sten Ekberg, and the episode on corn additives are being used and is making up humans. It's making humans obese or allergic to some foods. I'll elaborate on that here in a second. That's a good episode on corn additives. I'm just glad someone's talking about this shit rather than the fucking demonic transformer bullshit. And yes, B, unfortunately, the if you say that word just like that, then YouTube will punish you essentially for that. So you have to say transformer, transam. You can't say that word specifically, but to the whole tartrazine thing, once again, it was a mechanistic study that basically suggested that the cells that they put in a petri dish did not react favorably to tartrazine. Once again, do we have human randomized controlled trials or long-term human evidence to suggest that tartrazine is bad? I don't know. Could RFK be right? Maybe. Now, RFK was on a news show, and I should have had this clip pulled up, but the thing that gets demonized a lot, and people kind of know me as the guy that kind of bats against this stuff now, seed oils. RFK had stated that seed oils cause whole body inflammation. Okay, let's break this down a little bit more. When people talk about inflammation, the follow-up question should be, are we talking an acute, a holistic? What kind of inflammation are we talking about? Inflammation is measured through a marker called C-reactive protein. If you get your blood drawn, you can see your C-reactive protein markers. It's a CRP. And it's been a long time since I measured this, but basically you want it to be underneath 1, if I remember correctly. And that is your inflammatory markers. And basically that tells you, you know, if you do have inflammation, and basically is suggestive of overall cardio health. We know through countless studies, and I did a whole podcast on this. If you go back through the archive here and go to the seed oil podcast, I did a whole podcast talking about seed oils and, you know, overall cardiometabolic health. There is no good evidence to suggest that seed oils themselves, as in linoleic acid, is actually detrimental to heart health. I'll lay this out one more time when it comes to hyperpalatable foods. Seed oils are in a lot of things, and they do add a lot of calories, right? So if I were to take, I have this little pectin, right? See all these little picks in here? this thing is pretty dang small, right? I mean, literally it fits in my hand. If I were to fill this little piece up here, right? I mean, we're talking maybe an inch at most, right? An inch tall, and then maybe, let's say for all intent and purposes, it's a cubic square inch. If I were to fill that up with seed oils, butter, anything, and butter isn't a seed oil, but any kind of linoleic acid, let's say grape seed oil, canola oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, whatever. You could fill whatever oil up in there. You would have probably 100 to 200 calories. To my point earlier with the strawberries, 200 calories of oil. And once again, we're just pretending that this thing I'm holding right here, and for those listening, I'm holding a little pick container that once again is about a cubic inch big and tall. If I were to fill that with, you know, full of oil, you'd have 200 calories in oil versus a whole bowl of strawberries, which is 140 calories. And then a pound and a half of strawberries is around like 210 calories. You could see why this is an issue, because you're getting a lot of calorically dense food that, once again, doesn't provide you with a lot of satiety. Now, the flip side of this is that actually, once again, linoleic acid is actually cardioprotective. And Alex, this kind of goes to your point earlier about how corn and additives are being used to make people obese. Additives aren't necessarily, at least depending on the additive. This is kind of like another buzzword is when people say additives. High fructose corn syrup, a lot of people freak out about this because, once again, this is how a lot of liquid, you know, sweeteners basically packed into food nowadays, or, you know, more specifically syrups or, you know, pop. Your colas, your Pepsi, Coke, Dr. Pepper, you name it. They use high fructose corn syrup because it's a good way to give a, you know, basically like a watery texture into a drink and add a whole ton of sugar. Empty calories. Exactly. My man today, Alex. Good job. But basically, high fructose corn syrup is literally just another form of sugar. It turns over in your liver very fast, but it's not actually inherently bad for you. The problem with high fructose corn syrup, as I've laid this out in podcasts time and time again, is the same problem with seed oils. It adds a lot of calories without a lot of satiety, and there is very little to no nutritional benefit. Now, seed oils actually do have a nutritional benefit because they actually are cardioprotective. You can't say the same for high fructose corn syrup. Me personally, I avoid high fructose corn syrup. If I'm out at a restaurant and they have just regular old syrup there, I don't run away from it. I typically ask, hey, can I get some sugar-free syrup? I don't drink regular pop. If I'm out drinking or something and they make a mixed drink with it, it's not the end of the world, but I generally try to avoid it. If I got to a restaurant or if they're cooking, do I freak out and tell them don't use seed oils or treat people like crap if they put any of that stuff on my plate? No, I really don't care that much. But once again, if they have a fat-free or a sugar-free dressing, sauce, or anything like that, I'm all about it. That's what I tend to use. I don't have any, you know, high fructose corn syrup in my house because these are empty calories that don't contribute to overall health, satiety, or overall like nutritional status. So why would you keep them around? Once again, it's a cheap way to add a lot of sweetness, calories. And once again, seed oils are overall cardioprotective, but there's nothing wrong with them. Okay, corn is not bad in it by itself. Aspartame, if I remember, that makes you crave more. No, that's not true either. There were studies done where I think I talked about this on the artificial sweetener episode, but there was a study done where they basically had people drink water and drink pop, diet pop, right, with aspartame. And what they found is that actually people who drank the pop with aspartame actually lost more weight than the people who were drinking water. Aspartame is perfectly fine by itself. And it is kind of funny how you hear people who are anti-government, which, hello, that's me, but they'll make appeal to authority when it comes to how Europe has banned all these different substances, but we're not supposed to trust the government, but they must be right in this one situation because it suits my bias. Okay, well, I generally lean towards that they're full of shit on a lot of things, But like when it comes to nutritional stuff, like nutritional science is actually pretty good. When it comes to like social sciences, that's a little bit more loose. And if anybody's come over here from like the red pill sphere, essentially, which I know, Alex, you're a member of Jack's channel as well. A lot of the guys from that sphere, Ryan, Rolo, I'll talk about what they call the replication crisis, where basically like a lot of the studies that are done in like psychology and sociology have not been able to be duplicated because they're done on generally crappy science. When it comes to nutritional stuff, you can basically do these intervention trials or do food frequency questionnaires, which aren't perfect, or you could basically put people in metabolic wards and then you can control all the outputs, right? But basically, a lot of this, the nutritional research, you can actually control a lot of these variables and you have objective markers. When it comes to sociological and, psychological stuff, emotional stuff, these are very, very subjective markers. So how reliable are these things? If somebody loses weight, that is objective. If somebody gets their one rep max higher in a study, that's an objective marker of improvement. Now, if it's replicated over time, all the better. But once again, at least in nutrition studies, we have a way to replicate things and we have objective markers. If I ask you how you're feeling, that could depend if I give you a shot. That could depend if I just punched you in the arm. That depends if I kicked your dog. That depends on a whole bunch of topics that could completely change within a few minutes. So that's why like the replication crisis is so prominent in like sociological, psychological, and all these other fields, because once again, you can't really replicate this stuff. I got a bottle of Jacked and a pouch of Blue Chew. Oh man. The old lady's probably pretty stoked right now, man. Kevin, I'm sorry I didn't text you back. I saw what you texted me and I was busy. And once again, as soon as it's out of sight, it's out of mind. But, to kind of go back to the whole Make America Healthy again, we largely consume hyperpalatable foods. I mean, that is the majority of our diet nowadays. Like when you look at all the fast food restaurants, it's all fried chicken. It's these burgers loaded down with these full fat dressings or, sugar laden toppings with a bun and then a high fat burger patty. And then, chicken nuggets for the side. You get French fries, which are a carbohydrate, a starchy carbohydrate soaked in oil. So, I mean, the shit tastes good. And then, the saltiness, the crunch, the entire experience of eating hyperpalatable foods is enjoyable. I mean, no one can deny that. But, that's largely what's driving the obesity crisis. So I want to throw this article up here and I won't read it word for word because there are so many freaking sources in here. It's not fried, it's crispy. let me go over here, show this tab instead. I will put this up here. Highly recommend watching Super Size Me 2, Big Chick. Oh, there was a second one. Interesting. All right, you heard that, gang. I highly recommend watching Super Size Me 2. Okay, so why sugar did not cause the obesity epidemic? This is an article. If you type in BioLane, all one word, BioLayne, sugar, obesity, this should come right up. I'll read this first paragraph and elaborate a little bit more. Why it's unlikely that sugar caused the obesity epidemic. I'm sure the title got your attention. Before you proceed further, I want to conduct a short exercise in logic with me. Regardless of what your beliefs about sugar are, ask yourself, am I willing to change my mind if presented with sufficient evidence? If not, then I'd probably say don't waste your time reading any further, though you probably wouldn't read this anyways. If you're willing to change your mind based on evidence, ask yourself how much evidence do you require to change your mind? If you were shown multiple lines of evidence from epidemiology, incredibly tight controlled animal studies, human randomized controlled trials, as well as meta-analysis and systematic reviews, would that be sufficient? Please keep that in mind as we move forward. So, this article is fantastic. I've read it before. And as you could see, I forget how many sources there are, and here, I want to show this graph, and I'll scroll down to the bottom to show you how many sources there are. And Lane is probably one of my favorite people in nutrition, but rise in obesity is correlated with the increase in sugar intake. So as you see from here in the graph, sugar per kilogram per individual, back in the 1700s, not really a big deal. 1850 starts to go up a little bit. And then towards the late 1800s goes up pretty high and it starts to increase a little bit more up until about 1950. Goes back down to around like the mid 1900s levels. And then I want to say right around here would probably be around like the 60s, right? And this is where the introduction of the, you know, we left the gold standard. Interesting. We leave the gold standard and everybody gets fat right there, clear as day. And not to mention, you know, there's just so much there. So let me scroll down to the bottom so that way you guys can see. Okay, references. I want to make sure, how many references did he put in here? 76 different studies, very well researched article. Once again, this is the article I send to anybody and everybody whenever they start coming at me about sugar, because once again, I used to be one of you. I used to believe that sugar and seed oils were the enemy, but over time there is just so much evidence in the other direction that eventually I had to be like, all right, that's it. I was wrong. So make sure you check that article out. I'll read through some of these comments. It talks about that. One thing I will say, I love eating steak and fries with eggs and hash browns. Oh, dude, nothing better. Nothing better. It talks about crispy. That's one I ain't giving up. Yeah, dude, don't. If I may make one recommendation, and you can tell me to go pound salt all you like, but you know, maybe go for like a top sirloin steak instead of like a ribeye. You know, try to just, you know, maybe air fry the hash browns instead. I see where I'm going. And then eggs, maybe use egg whites, but you don't even use whole eggs. Whole eggs are fine too. The choline and the B vitamins and all that stuff that come in whole eggs. That's great stuff. I read some of that article, but there's a lot to take in, but what I got from it was very fascinating. Yeah. And exactly, Conrail, that is a lot to read in one article, but I mean, it is data packed. And if you don't change your mind after that, I just have to assume that you're not willing to be objective about, the data on sugar. And once again, I hated Lane. I hated people who said sugar was okay for you because that was my bias at the time. And we're talking about probably 4 or 5 years ago. I've since changed my mind because once again, the data is just so overwhelming on the other side. Cheap food that artificially tastes great, that's packed with excess calories or starvation. Gold standard makes sense to be. Yeah. Well, once again, once we departed from the gold standard, then I mean, everything changed. We also, you know, got the hormonal birth control. I mean, really the whole, like right around 1971, the entire world changed. Like I still don't think we understand how much the world is really different from then to now. You know, I've been just talking everybody's ears off for the last 40 minutes. Let me run an ad real quick for coffee and we'll get back into it. All right, guys, we are going to take a quick break from the show to tell you about the show's sponsor. We are now brought to you by Fox and Sons Coffee. As you can see right here, I got the Den Blend Dark. Really enjoy that. I've been drinking a lot of their Brazil Honey Prep. Right here, as you can hear, there's not a lot of beans left in it because I've been drinking it quite a bit. Just to tell you a little bit about Fox and Sons, why I support them and why you should too, is that Stephen had started the company up in Michigan to help teach his son about entrepreneurship. I'm all about that, and I do firmly believe that in order to spread liberty in our lifetimes, we have to support those who support similar values as us. And Stephen does support all the same libertarian values that I bring and talk about on the show a lot. So go to foxandsons.com, use code Kyle at checkout to get 15% off of orders $25 or more. And there's always free shipping whenever you place an order that is more than $37.99. Find their coffee absolutely fantastic, and I'm sure you will too. So one more time, go to foxandsons.com, use code Kyle at checkout to get yourself a little discount. Let them know I sent you and support the coffee that supports you. All right, guys, thanks. Back to the show. I was trying to find a specific graph during that, and I couldn't find it. If I can ask, what do you think of microwave foods such as healthy choice meals? How would that be in terms of health? For me personally, I tend to avoid those just because I don't like the way they taste. You should look at the macros on them, right? So my general guideline is that you want protein to be the highest, and carbohydrates and fats. You probably want the fats to be a little bit lower than the carbohydrates, but as long as protein is the highest, I would say that's probably a decent food, but use your own discretion. So like, basically you want like 20% of the calories going to protein. So like if, or not, I don't want to put this. Okay. If you have 200 calories, you want at least 20 grams of protein, ideally. From there, for every single meal, in my opinion, you want 20 grams of protein because that's right around the minimum threshold to trigger muscle protein synthesis. And that's the way that I always kind of look at each meal, is that every time I eat something, I want to get at least 20 grams of protein. So that way I trigger muscle protein synthesis and also kind of, you know, fill my body with amino acids to help, you know, keep basically all the proteins and everything recirculating in my body to help build lean mass. I've moved away from banquet and stuffers. Forgive my misspelling, especially after my father's heart attack earlier this year. Yeah, once again, just in my opinion, there are real good, right? I talk about this company all the time, and we always joke about it at work because I always cook it. But the Real Good Chicken, it's all one word. Real Good makes a lot of good foods that are higher in protein, lower in fat and carbohydrates, but they have microwavable stuff, and they have tons of like, they have like an orange chicken thing that was really good. Fried chicken that is just absolutely fantastic. And for me, it is like a godsend because all you do is just like put in an air fryer and a toaster oven and leave it cook for 30 minutes. And you got like really good chicken, get some sugar-free barbecue sauce. And I was telling the guys on Post Zero, Nuke, good to see you. We were talking about this a little bit. But I love using sugar-free barbecue sauce. If you get like hickory barbecue sauce and the Real Good Chicken, you can get chicken nuggets that are like breaded, but they're high in protein and low in carbs and fat. It tastes just like chicken nuggets from Wendy's, and it is fantastic. So you really don't have to give up on that much. You give up on a little bit of flavor, but like once you kind of get used to it, it's really not that bad. So, Nuke, if you can lay out in the comments what you said about protein when we were on Post Zero, and I know I'm throwing something at you right now and you're watching, you're probably, you're getting ready for salsa dancing or whatever, but I was trying to recall it and it didn't come to mind. For me, it's always, you know, you want to get at least 20 grams of protein per meal. And if he can recall that, and if not, go to Jack's channel, check out Post Zero, the one that we did this past Sunday where we talked all about health and fitness. Oh yeah. Japanese barbecue sauce. Ooh, there we go. I like that. One thing that I learned is that if you have a grill, cook your chicken, and then what you want to do is actually get some aluminum foil and then put, take it off like the main rack, wrap it in aluminum foil, cover the chicken in barbecue sauce, and then put it on the top rack and leave it cook for a little bit more, and it'll just be perfect. The barbecue sauce will be like perfectly melded to the chicken. Yeah, for barbecue, just use natural honey. Sure, it's a bit more expensive, but damn, it's so good. Yeah, I like that, but the problem is you're going to get a lot of calories. And I mean, once again, if you're okay with that and you're budgeting for that, all right. But yeah, I would prefer just going to like G Hughes or even like Sweet Baby Ray sugar-free barbecue sauce. Love that stuff. Teriyaki's marinade. Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I eat a grilled seasoned shredded chicken breast every day at work, along with a protein shake and drinkable yogurt. That's it. Yeah, man. The ratio is, there we go. That's exactly it. The ratio is 10 grams of protein per 100 calories. Perfect. Listen to that guideline. And once again, guidelines are not gospel. Do not freak the fuck out and feel like a failure if you didn't get that in. It's okay. Just try to opt in for a little bit more in the next meal. And like, I've been listening to a lot of Alan Aragon lately, who is just absolutely phenomenal on this nutrition stuff. And he gives phenomenal recommendations. As long as your total day's protein is good day to day, then actually like the overall protein meal to meal to meal isn't nearly as important. So like protein distribution can play a factor, and it is like a thing, but it's not the most important thing. Total daily protein is the most important thing. Right. So for anybody who's obese out there, you want to get around 1 gram of protein per pound of ideal body weight. That's a pretty good, you know, recommendation for everybody. So like for me, my ideal body weight would be 195. For me, it would be best if I get anywhere from like 150 to 200 grams of protein a day. Anything more than 200 grams of protein a day isn't going to hurt, but it is very difficult to get that much protein a day, and it costs a lot of money. So I wanted to cover this as well before I get out of here. I've been rambling here for 45 minutes and hopefully you guys learned something. If you're here right now and you're enjoying and you learned something, please hit the like. And if you so choose and you want to support me, I have a link below where you can subscribe and donate through the podcast hosting platform. And you can always join and become a channel member for $2.99 a month. Completely up to you guys. Once again, I will probably start putting out some videos. I want to do a little bit more video content, maybe short form stuff to just kind of keep the YouTube algorithm going. And maybe I'll release that stuff earlier for listener or for members of the channel, but just kind of throwing that out there. So I wanted to cover how much healthcare costs every single year. I probably should have started with this, and this probably would have been a very good place to start. But yeah, we'll go here. So let me pull this up at the stage. Healthcare costs and affordability. And this is one of the first things that came up. It was published May 20th, 2024, so it's pretty recent. Introduction. Healthcare costs in the United States have generally grown faster than inflation. The U.S. far exceeds other large and wealthy nations in per capita health spending, and healthcare represents a much larger share of the economy in the U.S. than in peer nations. Elevated healthcare and expenditure in the U.S., however, does not consistently translate into superior health outcomes. Rising healthcare costs contribute to many people facing difficulties affording medical care and drugs, even among those with insurance. Despite substantial spending, the U.S. health system grapples with disparities and gaps in coverage. And just a little side note here, I remember when Eric July had said, you have to be a special kind of asshole to brag about people having healthcare coverage or record healthcare coverage when you force them to buy it. It's just healthcare in this country is just an absolute disaster. It's truly a shame. But that being said, I do not favor universal healthcare, and we could talk about that another time. That's not today's podcast, but how has U.S. healthcare spending changed over time? Many people are familiar with the high and rising cost of healthcare in the United States from seeing how much they spend on their own health insurance premiums and out-of-pocket costs. In addition to these obvious health costs, there are also tax dollars that go to fund public programs and the amounts employers spend toward their employees' health insurance premiums. Total national health expenditures include spending by both public programs and private health plans, as well as out-of-pocket health spending. Total health expenditures represent the amount spent on healthcare, such as doctor visits, hospital stays, and prescription drugs, and related activities such as insurer overhead and profits, health research and infrastructure, and public health. Total health spending reached $4.5 trillion in 2022. Total healthcare expenditures in the U.S. from 1970 to 2022. So for those listening here, and this graph is just, it's unbelievable. So we have two lines here, and the green one going up from 1970 to 2020 is total national health expenditures, and the blue line is constant dollars. Back in 1970, total national health expenditures were below, I mean, they're damn near zero, right? It's way less than the $500 billion, which is the very, very bottom of this graph, back in the year 1970. And the constant dollars was right at about $500 billion. So from 1970 on, and as I said earlier, this is when we went off the gold standard. Funny how that works. When you could subsidize a whole bunch of food and change the food environment and change how people work and their physical activity day to day, they tend to get sick. So from 1970 all the way to 2020, I mean, the graph just goes straight up. The total national health expenditures and then the constant dollars just continues to go up. And I mean, they correlate pretty tightly although the overall amount of dollars going into healthcare has, you know, been always higher than the total national health expenditures, they're pretty damn near, they're pretty tightly correlated. So health spending in the U.S. has risen sharply over the last several decades. The official data on national health expenditures from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services show health spending totaled $74.1 billion in 1970. By 2000, the health expenditures had reached $1.4 trillion. And then over 20 years, the amount spent on healthcare tripled to $4.5 trillion. In the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic, health spending accelerated by 10.6% in 2020, even as the use of healthcare dropped, driven largely by public health spending and financial relief provided to healthcare providers. Health spending grew modestly from 2021 to 2022 by 4.1%, slightly faster than 3.2% increase from 2020 to 2021. I don't want to belabor this, but as you could see, we've just become dramatically less healthy over the decades. I think YouTube is fucking with me. I've noticed that just trying to make donations to Red Pill channels. It just keeps going in circles until it cancels. Yeah, you know what? I've noticed the same thing. And Alex Patino for the $5 super chat. Cheers. Thank you so much, brother. Let me give you
Falcon Punch.
Hopefully that wasn't too loud because I know when that plays, it is pretty damn loud. But anyways, thank you so much for the $5 super chat. I greatly appreciate it. And heartfelt fuck you from the bottom of my heart. Fuck you, Sydney Watson, for the bringing up the cuck article. Why are you doing this to me? Anyways, we are dramatically a less healthy nation than we were back in the 1970s. And we also move a lot less. The graph I was trying to find, and I know I've referred to it on previous podcasts, but basically we eat way more of everything. We eat way more of all the calories, but of course the one that we eat the less most of is protein. Protein is the most satiating macronutrient, although the most satiating foods are carbohydrates. Protein overall is the most satiating macronutrient due to the thermic effect of food, and obviously the mouthfeel and all that other stuff is the reason why protein is the most satiating nutrient. Oranges and potatoes are great for satiety as well, but like overall protein is the most satiating macronutrient. We eat more of everything, but that is the macronutrient that we eat the least amount of. Fats and carbohydrates have gone up exponentially together since 1970. When you subsidize all these fats and sugars and carbohydrates, you get a lot of them and they go into everything and we do lots and lots of less activity. I mean, you know, my steps have gone down recently. We do this all day. We dick on our phones. We scroll on Twitter and I'm not above any of this. So when I'm saying this, this isn't like me punching down at people. I do the same shit. We are much more sedentary than we were 50 years ago. We eat much more than we did 50 years ago. So therefore, we are a much, much sicker nation. Are there individual ingredients in foods that are making us sicker? Maybe, but I don't think that's the main driver of obesity. I do think it is, you know, sedentary lifestyles, hyperpalatable foods, and the food environment that we live in. Our hindbrains aren't conditioned to have full-on chocolate cake and ice cream and Big Macs and you name it all over the place. We weren't designed for this, so we have to learn to live with it. This gets back to what I was saying in the beginning of the podcast. Do I think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. can make America healthy again? I don't know. I don't think so. But one thing that you could do is educate people on this kind of stuff. Hey, hyperpalatable foods aren't good for you. Don't have them make up the majority of your diet. He is against Ozempic. RFK does not like Ozempic. But what other tool do we have? And to make this clear, I'm not telling everybody that you have to go on Ozempic. I am kind of pro Ozempic because this is the only band-aid that we have in curing the obesity epidemic. We've told people to exercise. We've told people to not eat junk food. They don't. And that's a choice that we have to accept that people are going to make. People are free to do as they please, but we can't stop people from making themselves fat. It is just the unfortunate truth of life. we have it so good here in America that now we don't die of starvation. We die of obesity. Life is hard, but life is also good. Things are so good that once again, we are dying because we're just too damn fat. So RFK could tell people about this kind of stuff. RFK could say that Ozempic may not be perfect, and maybe there even are malicious intents behind it. But the fact is that if people are losing weight and getting healthier because of it, you can't complain. And all the potential side effects are pale. Let's be honest. The side effects of Ozempic pale in comparison to the side effects of being obese for a lifetime. I did a video on the channel called The Truth About Ozempic, and it is clickbaity, but I talk about a couple different studies of Ozempic in that. And maybe I'll do a full dedicated podcast to Ozempic. Because I think it needs to be talked about a little bit more because it is a big deal. And I do think, I don't want to say it's a miracle drug, but it is going to change a lot of people's lives for the better. And you can't discount that because, man, I'll tell you what, the way that I feel about myself and about my health and just overall day to day from not being obese like I once was, night and day difference, man. I mean, that really changes everything. That is such a big deal. So RFK could do to educate people. I heard Mark Hyman, who's a little bit of goofball, saying something about like in South America, there's like different labels for foods. Maybe that would work. I think that sounds a little silly, but teaching people to opt for foods that are a little bit higher in protein. And, you know, maybe stop cooking with so much oils, maybe push in schools for kids to learn a little bit more about nutrition, to encourage more active lifestyles. There's not really much you could do from a government level that I think is going to make anything better. I think a lot of things are probably going to make things worse. You could incentivize regenerative agriculture, where you bring about grass-fed, grass-finished meat, which is much better for you than most other foods. The omega-3 to omega-6 ratio is like a nothing burger, essentially. But that being said, the omega-3 content inside of grass-fed beef is higher than that in grain-finished. You could, you know, give huge tax breaks to farms like that, so that way we get cheaper protein. And that way people would be able to improve their health through that. Give tax breaks to fruit farms, vegetable farms that aren't just doing these huge crop farming deals where it's just like corn or soybeans. Let's get some real food out there. Well, and not that that stuff's necessarily like bad. Like basically the reason why people freak out about soy is because there's some estrogen activity in some soy laden foods. Does that mean soy is going to give you bitch tits tomorrow? No, probably not. And really there isn't any sufficient evidence for that, but soy is a good source of protein for vegans if that's your squeeze. But I know I kind of was all over the place in this podcast, but I really wanted to talk about Make America Healthy Again. I disagree with RFK on some stuff, but I think it's at least good that people are talking about health, because that is very important. We are a very sick nation and there's no reason we should be. I'm doing everything I can to inform people and give people good information, but I get shouted down because there's so many more charlatans out there that fill people's minds with just absolute bullshit. And I'll finish it off with like artificial sweeteners aren't bad for you. Seed oils aren't bad for you. Man, it's tough. It ain't easy. Yeah. Exactly. Self-discipline goes a long way. It's difficult, but it's difficult to execute. Yeah, it is. But once again, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, man. Tax breaks. In the USA, we have to delete every single politician just to get. Yeah. Well, my thought on that is that we're trying to incentivize people to produce more protein and more healthy foods, which would be grass-fed, grass-finished beef. I think that's kind of like the pinnacle of health foods. But, you know, obviously that's going to be up to people to decide what they want to do, because I think animal foods, they gel well with our physiology because of the amino acid profile. They're highest in leucine, so they're very bioavailable to us. Plant proteins aren't the same way, but if you get sufficient plant protein, you get a lot of volume, but the amino acid profile of plants don't really gel with our physiology the same way. Although once you get to that threshold of leucine and overall protein throughout the day, if that's from plant sources, then you're still probably going to be okay. But in my opinion, a healthier diet is just easier to achieve with including animal foods. I wouldn't go out of my way to get ass loads of butter and the fattiest meat you could get. I would probably go for the leaner cuts. That's just my opinion. So RFK gets some stuff right. I think he gets the diagnosis right. I think his solutions and some of the diagnosis is wrong, but you know, we spend $4 trillion a year in healthcare. That's got to change, man. Healthcare is a disaster. You know, there's a lot of issues, but you know, if I had to give a couple tips right here at the end, try to go on, you know, walks or something like that. Try to work out, you know, 2 to 3 times a week. And instead of going for the fattiest cut of meat that you can at a restaurant, maybe go for the leaner cuts. Instead of the fries, get the broccoli or the asparagus, get a side salad. If you're at the store, instead of getting, you know, the first barbecue sauce you could find, go find the G Hughes or the sugar-free Sweet Baby Ray's or any kind of low sugar barbecue. What else? Go for lots of fruits and vegetables, lean meats. And then if you have to have ice cream or that's just what you want at this time, enjoy, man. You know, don't let this health don't have the bar for health be so high for you that it's unattainable. Yeah, exactly. Put down the pop. If you can, I'd switch over to Diet Pop. I mean, I'm a huge advocate for Diet Pop. I know people freak out about this kind of stuff, but I mean, truthfully, like the way that they kind of came to the conclusions of some of these studies that aspartame and sucralose are like going to give you cancer is that they gave mice basically like 15 times the average dose that a human would get day to day. And then they found out that like, oh yeah, when you give them 15 times the dose that we would ever be able to get in a day, then yeah, it tends to fuck them up a little bit. So Diet Pop is perfectly fine. And go for caffeine-free stuff because you don't want to disrupt your sleep. But yeah, definitely go for sugar-free stuff. Do not drink regular pop. At least in my opinion, I think that's a bad idea. Because once again, it's just not a lot of satiety. Yeah, exactly. Diet pop is good too. The only reason I've been able to keep my overweight under control is because I carry 250-pound kettlebells and 230-pound kettlebells. I can work out outside of my truck. Yeah, dude, that's great. All movement is good movement. So yeah, you know what? I'll go ahead and throw it out there now. I'll plug everything and we will get out of here. Everybody, thank you so much for hanging with me for this hour where I just kind of ramble on about health stuff. You can find me at Commentovic on Twitter. Thank you guys so much for watching. Make sure you like the video on the way out. If you so choose, become a channel member. I greatly appreciate our members here. B. Cornish, Alex Patino, Eddie Grimm is a member right now as well. I appreciate all that stuff. What else did I want to get out of the way? A Common Crown. We're doing absolutely fantastic. We have 7 new songs, I think, pretty damn well along the way. So look forward to next year. We will definitely have some new music next year, and I can't wait. Tomorrow night, I will have Chris Rossini from the Ron Paul Liberty Report on with me, and we're going to talk about some of Trump's picks. I was originally going to talk about that tonight, but instead I decided that I wanted to talk about Make America Healthy Again. So tomorrow, come back at 5 p.m. Eastern time to hear me and my friend Chris Rossini talk about the Trump picks and all the things going on and how we think the next 4 years are going to go, some good, some bad. But we'll kind of see how that goes. So A Common Crown, 5 till midnight on Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you go check us out there. A Common Crown, as I just said, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. And I just want to thank all you guys for listening for the last 362 episodes and also for getting me to over 1,000 subscribers, because now I make money off of YouTube. So please watch other content. If you so choose, feel free to go through the back catalog. There is hundreds of hours of content now. And yeah, I think we'll wrap her there. Thanks, guys, so much. And until next time, take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.